Mankin Magan joins us with his new book, 32 Words for Field, The Richness of a Language Closely Tied to the Natural Landscape. Here to tell us more about it is the man himself, delighted to be joining us live on the line. From whereabouts on the planet are you, sir?
Hey, Giles. Yeah, I'm in the Midlands of Ireland in County Westmeath, right beside a lake called Loch Lane, which has all sorts of supernatural and sort of mythic stories attached to it.
Ooh, we like a bit of supernatural on a Monday. For those who don't know you, haven't come across you before, you've done this sort of thing before, at least writing books. Like, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I used to be a travel documentary maker, and I traveled all over, you know, making documentaries in India, in South America, in China, in Africa. And then I realized I need to focus on what's happening in Ireland. And I realized that there was so much myth and stories and legend in and sort of almost an indigenous awareness happening, you know, still existing in Ireland. And I wanted to start recording that. And one of the main reasons was because actually my great granduncle was the last of the old bardic poets. So right. The poets who were descended from the Druids. And he was entitled to wear a cloak of crimson bird feathers. So basically, you know, there's a lot of paganism going on there. He was keeping the old stories alive. And so that's what I'm doing now.
Tell me, I think we need more crimson bird feather capes in our society these days, surely.
You can imagine why first Christianity and then the Vikings and then the English would have tried to get rid of it. You know, if you have wild people who are in touch with nature, it can be a dangerous thing. So I can see why it got rid of it, but it's an excellent time to bring it back, I reckon.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, you say the Vikings trying to get rid of stuff, but if you think about bards and spoken word and a history of where the people who perhaps aren't so literate and the easiest way to do it is to set it to music and set it to rhyme so it flows naturally, then, you know, then your Vikings, TV series notwithstanding, but the real Vikings are pretty good, are pretty hot on that thing.
Yeah, but when I said like, so my great-granduncle, it was actually my great-granduncle four generations back, was alive in the 17th century. He was getting it directly from Druid lineage. Mm. And so when he said, the reason we have Seamus Heaney and like, you know, Yeats as poets, Ireland, poets in Ireland were different. A poet in Ireland, the word could manifest reality. So the creation myth of Ireland, we know the very first words were said when the first human being arrived in Ireland. He actually manifested the land into being. And it's in Old Irish, but it's still understandable to me now today. And it goes, Am gwe am wir, am ton trehen, am fuim mara. So like, I am the wind on the sea. I am the sound of the ocean. I am the torment of the oceans. And so it goes on like this forever, manifesting every word. So the Irish, the sort of the Celtic idea of words, it actually it creates spells, and it's far more powerful than just nice stories that, you know, recount the battle deeds of a former warrior.
And you see a lot of people are going to be rushing towards the studio now, waving their Old Testaments, going, but you see, in the beginning was the word.
It's exactly, these are all global things. Like, I'm working a lot with Aboriginal elders in Australia and Native Americans, and they all say the same thing. Word had power long ago. It's just something that we've forgotten. Now we just put it in books and think it makes pretty prose. But as you said, the world, like the Cree nations say that the world is composed of the 36,000 sounds of their language. These are universal concepts.
And, you know, and not to be boring everybody to death here, but I'm currently, like you do, reading a book on hieroglyphics, and Ra and all that was all about the word, and he gave the name, and nothing could come into being without him saying, well, that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And so I thought, okay, normally in Ireland, we sort of package our culture as, oh, like some nice new age Celtic scrolls for tourists and fairy stories we tell our children. And I'm thinking, actually, there is all this encoded wisdom going back thousands of years in our language and in our culture. And I thought I should present this. And like, interestingly, it's not only Ireland's culture, it's Ireland and Britain's culture. You know, the Anglos and the Sacs came over whenever, 600 AD. Before that, we were all speaking this Celtic language. And in fact, at one point, the whole of Europe was, you know, but what happened is it survives on the margins, survives right on the west coast of Ireland. And in another format that, you know, Proto-Celtic, which is the first language, very close to the Indo-European language it came from, it actually survived in the East too. So there's all sorts of words that you find in Irish and you find in Hindi too. You find, because they come from Sanskrit. So I was trying to just widen out the story, saying our language and our culture has all of these insights into this ancient world within it. And, like, wouldn't it be nice to sort of dive into that again?
And the thing, one of the things is, though, you mentioned that whole, you know, Irish are the capital O-I, and it's all sort of, you know, there's got to be a pint of the black stuff somewhere, and there's got to be, you know, Michael Flagg's got an awful lot to answer for, you know, and it's that, I mean, with that, there's nothing wrong in promoting that image of Ireland, for, you know, which is wonderful, but there is that druidic, that is that connection with the land that, on a superficial level, means because, hey, it's Ireland has been super, you know, has been overwhelmingly, you know, agricultural community, but nowadays, of course, there is a deeper and more elemental connection with the land.
Exactly. And I mean, it's our government who was to blame for, like, promoting Guinness as a label of Ireland. Whenever an American president, we stuck a pint of Guinness into their hands. But it's interesting, the word we say is an Irish word, sláinte, you know, health. And it's like, by reconnecting to this Irish word, you reconnect to who your lineage, and that sort of brings health, is the idea. But as you say, like, my book is called 32 Words for Field because, I mean, I could name 40 different words for field. If you are a people who've been living continuously on that one piece of land for, like, my people have been living for 6,000 or 7,000 years here, the Celtic language we've only been speaking maybe 2,500 or 3,000 years. But it leads, like, I'll have a machara is an open field, mean is a smooth field, raedlin is a field for games or dancing, rain is an upland field, plas is a smooth field. I could go on. Like, my granny used to do this. She used to give me, like, about 40 different words for a stone. Like, kaid was a binding stone. Cowis was a stepping stone. Barshlak was a stone on which women used to beetle clothes, used to wash clothes. Flubon, well, that's one of the words for holes. My favorite word for hole.
Yeah.
It's a hole that's been hollowed out by the hooves of beasts and then filled with rain.
What's
as opposed to fop, which is a hole which a lobster hides in. And puhish is a hideaway for a wild beast. Like, why should we not celebrate and bring back all of these old words that are in so many languages?
There's a word for a hole that a lobster hides in. I mean, if that hasn't made your Monday already, I don't know what. Isn't it interesting as well that you mentioned sort of Native American culture and everybody, oh, fantastic, the whole thing, and Aboriginal culture in Australia. And oh, but when it's closer to home, if you like, it's almost overlooked as if it's not as valid if it hasn't got a dramatic backstory, which obviously this has as well. But it's not perhaps on trend.
Yeah, and I think we got a bit nervous. During the 20th century, we got so rational and so scientific focused that we were embarrassed that all of our language, like, there's nothing exceptional about Irish. It just has, because it was forgotten, because it was on the very edges of Europe, it kept a lot of the old stuff in it. But there is so much magic, there is so much spirit world and sort of crazy stuff in the Irish language that in the rational world, when we were trying to, you know, woo Silicon Valley to Ireland and get intel and things over, we didn't want to say that we had a word like lesbáin, which is the dancing coloured lights that appear before your eyes at times when you drift a little bit too far into other dimensions.
Oh.
The dancing coloured lights that appear in your life before your eyes when you're just too close to the other worlds. Or skim. Skim means a lot of things, but in one meaning is succumbing to the other world through sleep. So the fact that there's always, like, the best way of describing it, every school child learns Irish in Ireland, yeah? And we learn the word counter. And so counter means a district or a place or location. But they've conveniently in the schools forgotten about the opposite of counter, which is alter. It's still in the dictionaries, but they don't talk about it. Alter is the opposite of counter. Alter is the other world, the nether realm, the place between. And our ancestors always realized there was only a very thin veil between counter, the world that I presume you and I are in at the moment, but it's hard to be sure.
Yes,
and then alter, that wide, infinite world that, as you say, is the basis for so many native cultures. It unites us all.
But in a Europe that's getting increasingly bland, and I'm talking nothing about the politics, but the way that we eat the same, we dress the same, we listen to the same music, we drive the same cars, then a language that celebrates a world where you with the and I'm not going to start getting the crystals out here, right? But, you know, it that celebrates a world that is of, that celebrates the slowing down of time and also the prospect that there is magic out there, or whatever you want to call it, and can summon magic through ritual or chanting, or whatever, then that's going to be celebrated, surely.
I think so. I mean, I would have, had you asked me this 10 years ago, I would have thought this was going to die. Like, as you said, everything was becoming global and universal, and we didn't have time for these old superstitions and these old calmer ways of really engaging with nature. And yet, I think it's since COVID, like, that there is this new excitement in reconnecting with things that were ancient, the things that had, the Irish word is shasavach, that they had rootedness to a particular, to a past, to one's forebears, to ancestors. And like this book, I first published a version of it in Ireland during the lockdown, during COVID, and it became this massive bestseller. Now, it wouldn't have. 5 years before, we were embarrassed by our language. We wanted to move on, get jobs, get to Australia or England or America. But there's something happening, and not just in Ireland. We are all wanting to connect with something more meaningful in a world of increasing uncertainty.
If we have 32 words for field, Machan, then how do you, I mean, there are obviously at least 40 different words for water and the where the lobster hides, etc. How on earth do you, because it is the Pandora's box, once you're, it's that portal, isn't it? You know, and we're talking dimensions, but once you've opened it, it's tricky not to put it back, and not only that, but then you've got to skim, and there must be a way for that as well, to skim and take the because you can't put every word, surely, because I mean your brain would explode probably with the overload of information.
It would explode. And in one way, I'm sort of doing a disservice. Like 32 words for field, it picks out the most evocative, the most romantic words.
Yeah.
And in a way, you know, so many people in Ireland and in America, particularly now, and a bit in Britain, want to relearn the language because they come across my book or my talks. But really, I am, you know, Irish is also a very rudimentary, practical word. And as you said, I could give you just as many dull words, but it's to look at the romantic side and to see there is all of these insights within language. Like there's seven different words for visiting people, different ways of visiting people. And like they're engaging things in a time where we all feel more isolated, that there was a word for a gossiping visit to a neighbor's house, or a visit which had singing and dancing in it, or frequenting a neighbor's house solely for the purpose of hearing other stories. Like there's a beauty to that. There's a beauty to it.
And also it opens again a door to a different time or a different society. Because if you have a word for going to somebody's house to listen to stories and songs, that gives you a glimpse into the society that you have.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, and there's also this practical element. Like we are all realizing that we're going to have to engage with nature in a different way than we did before. It's like, you know, again, the 20th century and the early 21st century was this exploitative way of practical, of modern, efficient. And we're realizing because the Irish and the British have lived on these islands, you know, I said a lot of us have for 7,000 years, the rest of us for about 3,000 years. I mean, another big majority of us. We built up all of this knowledge of how to live sustainably, how to work with the seas, how to work with the fields on this rocky, windswept island. And all of that is still encoded within the language, too. Like I go to fishermen and the words they give me, the beauty of the words for particularly for like there's a word which is what is the word? Oh, so and for a reef that is under the water, and you'll always have mangachi and balachi, which are balan ras and pollock under this water. And for the likes of me or you, we won't see it. And we think, well, we don't need it because you can have an echo sounder. But in their ancestral law, passed down, ogluin gadluin is the Irish word from generation to generation. But gluin means the knee. So from granny's knee to grandchild's knee, granny's knee to all the, you know, for thousands of years, is the knowledge of where these underwater reefs are and where the fish is to be found. Like it's beautiful, and it could turn out to be very practical information in the past if we do need to engage with the land in a more sustainable way.
And also there's the phonetics of it, because you know you're speaking, you have a beautiful, I mean the Irish accent is one of the most beautiful accents. I mean this is why people love to hear Irish accents on broadcasters. And there's a certain way that the language naturally forms as you're speaking it, surely.
I think so. I think if you have a language that genuinely does go back to a concept where these druid figures believed that they could actually say words and manifest them in the world, that's some powerful, that's some power. And actually what I'm realizing now is, so that's in the language. But if you go back to the mythology, which the language is steeped into, the mythology is all about the goddess. It's not about druids. It's not about male druids. So, my, you know, just before Christianity, before St. Patrick came, there were these druids who sort of took over. But it's clear sometime before that, because all of our place names and all of our stories are about these powerful female goddess energies. And that concept, that sort of energy is infused in the language too. So you start speaking this language, which is about the goddess, which like all of the, so many of the, I wrote a book about 4 months ago about different words for the woman, women's bodies, mainly because in my book, in 32 Words for Feeling, there's a chapter on the penis. I think there's about 40 different words for the male organ, nothing for the female, because you see, the Celtic scholars and the, you know, the Gaelic academics weren't recording it. So they're all in the traditional speech still, in the Gaeltacht and the Irish-speaking areas. So I went and gathered some of those, and they're all words, words for the vagina and the vulva are all about the female landscape. So the so about the landscape. So the female body was akin with the landscape. And what a beautiful, like, we're not going to pollute our rivers with nitrates or, you know, or sort of put fertilizer all over our fields if we think of the land as a goddess again.
Absolutely. And yeah, I'm with you on that one. Absolutely with you. How did you compile it? Was it literally going through archives or literally hitting the happy trail and cornering fishermen and grabbing people on the Atlantic coast? I mean, what's the practicalities of this one?
So I hadn't realized, like, you know, as I said, this man, the Aegon O'Reilly, this is the most famous poet, my great-great-granduncle four generations back, he obviously the British made sure to wipe him out because he was too powerful. But then my great-granduncle, the O'Reilly, was the man who founded the IRA, basically the Irish Volunteers in 1912. And he was one of the founders of the Gaelic League, which was the revival of the Irish language in the 19th century. But he didn't have Irish. So he brings my granny and the whole family down to the Blascoil Islands, the source of so much of our old lore in the southwest of Ireland, off the coast of Kerry. And they immerse themselves in the old stories, in the old language. And I come along in 1970. And for my granny, so my great-granduncle, the O'Reilly, He was wiped out in the Easter Rising as one of the leaders, and he had to be because he was one of the officers. He knew he was going to die. So my granny remembered that, kept the language and all his lore and all the lore he had collected alive, gave it to me in 1970, and then spent, I was like 3/4 of my year was spent in Dublin, but the rest of the quarter was in West Kerry going to see these old Blascoil Islanders, these people who had kept the lore alive. So a lot of the words were in the back of my mind. And then, as you say, I was just talking to fishermen and going online. And luckily, there's some wonderfully quirky dictionaries. Particularly, there's a dictionary by Amparo Dineen, by Father Dineen, this priest in the 1920s, who gathered so many of these beautiful, sort of quirky, imaginative concepts together.
So what do you hope? Because I've only got 2 minutes and we could go on for most of the day about this one. But what do you hope that people will take from your book?
When I just thought it was going to be a very minor book. And what I'm seeing is there's people all over the world going mad for this. Like at the moment, I'm on Instagram and TikTok and I have a podcast. And people, I see something revival. I see a revival in interest in the land, in the goddess energy. So I think if we reconnect with these old cultures, we realize actually we have more and more in common with cultures all around the world. That's my hope.
If people want to find you online on Instagram, and presumably there's not, where can they find you?
It's all, I mean, my name is ridiculously hard to spell, but it's all Manchan McGann. My website is manchan.com, manchan.com. That's Manchan. It means like little monk as a name. And then McGann is even harder, is M-A-G-A-N. Unfortunately, these old words and old languages that aren't easy to spell in modern language.
Just leave me with a parting shot, that hole in the ground with water in it where a lobster hides. What's that one again?
So that was a fach. And one of the great things a fisherman told me is if you hear both the lobster wants to stay there and also an eel, and when they fight, one of the greatest noises in the world is when a lobster and an eel are fighting in a fach for dominance.
You learn something new every day, but we're going to run out of time. The book is called 32 Words for Field, Lost Words of the Irish Landscapes by Machon Magan. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Joe.